You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
All right, we have an update. Dan, did you see this horrible video
of
the car that crashed into a brick house? And I mean, it went through and into a brick house. And sadly, the 74-year-old woman who was inside her home did not survive the wreck. Car happened to be a Tesla.
Safe to say we're not buying all the details in the story.
Dan, there's video of this car. And I looked up the neighborhood. This is a dead-end cul-de-sac-type neighborhood dotted with homes. My guess is the speed limit is 25 miles an hour.
Is this the one down in Texas?
Yes.
Oh, okay. There,
it would be no more than 30 miles an hour, but likely 25 miles an hour. This is a very, very small single-family home residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
In the video, this car looks like it is going 100 miles an hour down the streets of this residential neighborhood.
Wow.
The car did not directly plow into this poor woman's home. The car, whose driver was speeding like a maniac, hit a curb, and then the car careened Dukes of Hazzard style into the house, right?
Yeah, I see that. Wow, was the autopilot on and going
well,
crazy?
Well, the very first thing the driver said was, well, the car was on autopilot. The hell it was. Let me tell you two things. Number one, cars on autopilot do not drive 78 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone. Nope. Do you know how that happens? You put the physical gas pedal to the metal, and that is what Tesla is now saying. Listen to this update. Tesla says the driver overrode the autopilot in the crash that killed that grandmother.
How do you do that? You have to be like a computer tech
or something? No. If you've got it on autopilot, it will go the speed limit. I've got it in chill mode, so if it's 30 miles an hour, it's going to go around 30, 34, 35.
You know better than that, Dan. What?
If you take your foot and slam the accelerator down, it thinks that you're overriding the system. Oh, she wants to go faster. It will go faster. So if you have it on autopilot going 35, you can still theoretically.
Well, my car does that as well.
Yes,
and I've got it in cruise control.
Think about it.
Press the gas.
And all of a sudden you go to 100 miles an hour if you want to. I don't want to, but you could.
So we know for a fact there was not a glitch in this driving computer.
Give me a break. This is just what completely irresponsible drivers are hearkening back to every time they get caught doing something stupid. Oh, it was on autopilot. The head of Tesla's autopilot division is pushing back against what the driver of that Tesla claims happened after he crashed into a house on Friday. The crash happened in a quiet neighborhood. Family was preparing for dinner.
Yeah, that car was going really
fast. Oh, it's going so fast.
Mm-hmm.
The Harris County Sheriff's Department said the driver told them the car was on autopilot. The head of the autopilot division then took to social media this morning. Yep. In this case, the driver manually overrode self-driving by pressing the accelerator all the way down to 100% of the accelerator pedal in a residential area. They reached a speed of 73 miles an hour during the crash and had the accelerator pressed even after the crash.
I mean, I've seen that. I've done stories here in Kansas City. I've seen that done with a regular car years ago where they're going really fast down the road and they hit somebody's front yard and it's a little raised and then they end up on the roof.
I tried to hit the brake and then they hit the accelerator. I'm telling you, I'm not an apologist for Tesla. I'm not. But cars in autopilot do not speed 75 miles an hour down the road. It just doesn't. Do you know who does that? Idiot drivers.
Okay, I got a better question.
Yes, please, go ahead.
From the text line. Is it really a gas pedal?
Yeah. Oh, what should I call it? That's so interesting you just said that.
Just
you're
call
right.
It the go pedal.
There's no gas.
The accelerator?
Well, it was definitely in the position down.
Go pedals.
And how creepy is that, Sam? You called this. You said Tesla already knows what happened. Of course they do.
They know exactly what
the
happened.
The second this hit the headlines, Tesla went in, you know, like
they knew what happened before it hit the headlines.
Geofenced that wreck and went, yep, he had the accelerator pressed down.
Mm-hmm. But could there have been some kind of computer glitch in this rolling computer?
Mm-hmm.
There could have been.
You sound like this man's defense attorney.
Sensors go bad all the time. I've shared the story before.
The world is an imperfect place, Sam.
I was driving my ex-girlfriend's car. She had rear-ended somebody, and the vehicle that she was driving had it was one of the newer one of the early applications of the auto stop. So they put the safety mechanism in cars where if it senses that you're going to rear end somebody, it slams on the brakes automatically.
Yeah.
She had rear-ended somebody, and when they fixed the front end of her car, they did not replace that sensor. I was traveling at 75 miles an hour on the highway.
Oh, no.
The sensor decided that there was something in front of me that I was going to hit.
Did it phantom brake?
That car locked up.
Yep.
Now, you just hit the brake to take it out of that automatic brake situation, but
you have to do that quickly.
It was scary, but it's proof that sensors do fail. I mean, yes, the technology can be... It is a beta technology. It's not perfected yet, but it can be top-notch and meet all of those driving requirements, and sometimes it can mess up.
I mean, Occam's razor. What's the simplest explanation?
It usually
was
is.
It the guy's foot pressing
an idiot
down?
Was, an idiot was driving 75 in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. That's what it was.
From the text line. Tesla changed the computer readout.
Yes.
It's a conspiracy.
In that moment... Fine. When we get back, I love this story. You guys, when was the last time you used a Rolodex? And Sam is going to go, what's a Rolodex? And further, when was the last time someone handed you or you handed someone a business card? And let me tell you, KMBZ gave me a whole box of shiny business cards about 15 years ago.
Still have them.
Do you know where that box sits? In the old junk drawer of an office back there. It is still on the desk with the computers that don't work and the TV monitor that doesn't work.
It goes into the olden days display.
We need to condemn that office, by the way.
We'll talk about that later.
It's bad.
What happened?
Talk about algae.
To the Rolodex and the business card. And if you still use it, why? I can think of a couple of industries where the business card is still king.
I have business cards.
Why?
To give to people.
Why?
To allow them to have a quick way to see my information if they need to contact me for anything regarding personal training or radio.
Okay,
or
wait.
Just contact me in general.
Do you have a business card with your personal cell phone number on it?
I do.
You've lost your mind. You give that out to people.
Yeah. I don't have one for personal training yet, but I do have one for my radio stuff. Yeah.
He doesn't stand on the corner of Broadway and
toss them out the window.
A business card. That's my number. Go ahead.
I'm telling you, it holds a lot more meaning than just, hey, let's just exchange information real quick.
There's still a way to give people information
we're all online.
Format.
What's funny about the KMBZ business cards is the phone number listed on the business card, because I would never put my cell phone number on a business card, is the desk phone in that office that has not been answered in 15 years.
I bet there are people that still, in certain jobs, still use the Rolodex. One, because they know where everything is, but also it's faster.
A Gen Zer has revived a forgotten New York City Rolodex filled with businesses, and New Yorkers are obsessed. We're going to tell you about what she did, why everyone thinks this is so funny, and if you use a business card anymore, why? And I can only think of one industry. There's only one where they throw those around all the time. You know what I'm talking about? It's the one at the top. Think about it.
Real estate.
Yes.
Yeah.
The real estate agent.
Well, this person on the text line says, if you're a small business owner like me, we use them all the time in networking meetings.
Okay, maybe the networking meeting.
But Dana, to your point, even on real estate, you can find the information online. Why give out a business card?
I mean, they're more like junked up on the table because 9 real estate agents have been there. Do you know what I mean?
Line, I'm a real estate agent and I still give out business cards.
But that is, I think, the number one. That will be the last to go into the digital age with that stuff.
In this digital age, I think we fall into this trap thinking that, well, hey, just put it on the computer, put it on the phone, use your phone, use the QR code. It's faster physically to have that physical card to look at it and have the information. It's better, I think, than
you can text
the
us
internet.
Or call with the other industries that use this. And I just thought of another one because there is a business card on our refrigerator. I just thought you are right with one other home improvement sort of industry. We do keep a business card on the fridge. That's just two.
HVAC?
We're now at two. 913-586-7798. You're listening to Dana and Parks.
Get the Dana and Parks podcast, KMBZ.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast. Download, like, subscribe, do it all. The Dana and Parks podcast, KMBZ.com.
So it's a sweet story. One New Yorker is proving that the city's past is just a business card away. 31-year-old Marie Hang stumbled upon a dusty Rolodex at an Upper East Side estate sale. And of all the treasures in this house, she wanted the Rolodex. She turned the stranger's curated collection of business cards into a heartwarming, nostalgic rabbit hole, tracking down old school New York City shops, performers, and neighborhood gems that somehow survived decades of change. The step back in time began with a $5 impulse buy at an estate sale in an old apartment building near Central Park in 2025, just months after she moved to the city from Ohio. And she said, to your point, Sam, and to Dan's point, I have had so much fun discovering everything inside of this Rolodex because I'm a nostalgic person and physical media matters so much to me. I love finding a tangible list of places to discover that were loved by a longtime resident of this town. The business card holder, which she later learned isn't technically a Rolodex at all, belonged to an Upper East Side woman affectionately known as Peach, who died in 2024 at age 79. After a life filled with art, museums, travel, volunteering, and apparently impeccable taste. So she goes on to talk about this Rolodex, but in my mind, I picture this as the old business card holder, which was sort of leather bound on the outside, but pleather fake. And you would open it up and there were these plastic inserts inside.
Yeah.
Where you would just put rows and rows of business. My mom used to have one.
I have a business card holder.
And it got me to thinking as a reporter 30 years ago, you could not live without your Rolodex. Every source you had, every person, yeah. Every cell phone number was in the Rolodex. Well, then came the cell phone.
So I wanted to expand a little bit on the heightened legitimacy of a business card over just trading information in your cell phone.
Yeah.
You meet somebody at a networking event, they might run into 50 people. If they put 50 people into their cell phone, they then go home that night and probably forget most of what they talked about from that event, right? They wake up the next morning and they're thinking to themselves, man, I talked to that one guy. He said he was in radio. Yeah. I really want to remember who he is. And you start scrolling through your phone and you have 250 contacts and now there's 50 additional contacts that you just added
or
to it.
You now have 50 business cards from the 50 people at the networking event the night before.
And you can look through those business cards and even the pictures on the business
cards.
Telling
you, they go straight to the trash. I think for most people, they go straight to the trash. I could be wrong. Let's go to Jan in North Kansas City. Hey, Jan.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
I do still have some business cards and have picked some up recently, like at my auto repair shop. And primarily, I have doctor's offices. They still have business cards out there, you know, for a particular
provider,
specialty doctor or whatever, the physical gym where you go to or whatever. You had to have some rehab, and I had a card with the guy's name on it. Also, small businesses, like you go to a festival or something, and you buy something that people have made, you know, it's jam and jelly or it's essential oils or whatever.
Sure.
They will usually still have business cards with also maybe a phone number, but also their online.com.
Yeah, their website.
On the card. And so, yeah, I still have some that I keep in my wallet, you know, mainly the doctor's ones and the auto repair. And I have some others. Like I said, the others are generally from small businesses. It's a Beautiful Day still has cards.
Yeah, sure it is. Hey, Jan, thank you for the call. I also think, even though I understand the tangible, I still like a physical newspaper. I still like a physical book. If I needed to remember the name of the guy that was the trainer, and I think it was Sam, and he was on KMBZ, I would just Google it, don't you?
No.
No.
Because if you look up personal trainer Sam, how many personal trainers out there are named Sam?
That work at KMBZ? I think you're it.
Well.
Let's go to JJ in East Kansas City. Hey, JJ.
Hey, good afternoon. I'd like to say hi to my wife And I just wanted to tell you guys, when somebody hands me a card, I just take a picture of it and let them hang on to it. That way I have a reminder, and then I have the number. And then it's done. It takes about 8 seconds, 5 seconds.
You take a photo of the business card.
Yeah. Why they have it in their hand. I just say, here, hold on to it.
And then you take it back. I don't need it in my clutter. I don't need it in my car. And I do this, JJ, for anyone who doesn't know, if you have an iPhone, the most helpful setting on that thing. When you go into your photos, you can search. And do you know this, JJ? You can literally search business card. I have gone in there and found, fun fact with the iPhone. If you are going into your photos and you think, gosh, 6 months ago, I took a photo of my kid's social security card. Go into your iPhone under search. When you pull up your photos, you know, I've got like 13,000 photos in my iPhone. In the search box, if you type in business card, all of the photos you have ever taken of business cards pop up. If you type in Hawaii, there's all your photos from your Hawaiian vacation. If you type in KMBZ, you can do it by date, you can search by location, and you can search by physical thing. So I've searched before beach. You can search beach. Every vacation you've ever taken that involves sand, all of those photos. And it comes up on this program from time to time. Even during a break, Scott and I will be like, what year did we do that thing where we did that thing? And you can type in whatever event you're talking about, and the photo pops right up. It's brilliant.
And with regard to the business card, we always talk about the first impression.
Yeah.
Being the individual with the business card when 90% of other people don't have one makes you stand out.
Yeah.
Whether it's a waste or not, whether you spent $50 on those 100 business cards and they're all going to get thrown away.
I can poo-poo because I didn't spend the money. Like, I think my original business cards, Sam, still go to the old phone, the desk phone in the office that we don't use.
Yeah.
So I could give those cards out. You would never reach me that way because I don't even think those phones work.
The desk phone at my desk, I don't have access to the voicemail, and I have 9 voicemails. I don't know how to get it.
I hope no one needs CPR.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, Sam, I need you to call me back right away. HVAC, I will give you. We definitely have...
any home services, really.
A home service thing on our refrigerator somewhere.
Yeah.
On the side or something like that. 913-586-7798. We're back with much more on Dana and Parks after this. Isn't he supposed to say thunder here at some point?
Yeah, at some
thunder.
Point.
There
it is.
Which is coming tomorrow afternoon, according to Brian Busby.
Oh, yeah.
Please be weather aware if you're going to the Van Fest.
His response to me. Well, what about lightning? Well, for it to be a thunderstorm, Sam, it requires lightning. Yep, that's...
that is exactly the specific information that we have come to know and love from our Brian Busby.
What is he again? The atmospherical gangster?
He is the atmospherical gangster. Of all the days that we have today, Midsummer Day, because over in Europe, this is the summer solstice, historically falls on this date. International Fairy Day, if you're into folklore and magic, I'm not. But this one is a day that I'm interested in talking about. Although I don't know that we need this many days. Today is actually National Take Back Your Lunch Break Day. It is a workplace wellness day, encouraging everyone to step away from their desks and properly recharge during work, whether you eat or not. Did you take a lunch today? And some shocking 50 to 55% of Americans on any given day will answer that question, no. More than half of United States workers skip lunch to please their boss and get more done. And researchers say that is actually counterproductive. Skipping lunch may feel productive in the moment, like you're buying extra time by powering through. But according to a new survey by corporate catering organization Easy Cater, the evidence points the other way. Regularly missing lunch can quietly drag down your focus, your mood, and even affect how well you work with other people. So I ask you, on this National Take Back Your Lunch Break Day, what industry do you work in And is it frowned upon quietly when someone takes a lunch? Because Gen Zers, it turns out, are the most likely to skip lunch for fear of being judged, not only by managers, but by their coworkers.
I have never taken a lunch in any job I've ever had.
Why?
Well,
it's harder in radio to take a traditional, what am I going to get up and go leave for 30 minutes and just, yeah. Is there going to be dead air?
My first job at Panera, we were allotted a 15-minute break, but I could eat in way less than 15 minutes because I was in high school and we had to do that every single day. So I would just clock out for like 5 minutes, eat really fast, and then clock back in because I wanted as many minutes on my time card as I could possibly get. QT didn't, they don't really do that.
You've always had jobs where, if I think correctly, Sam,
eat on the fly.
It's really hard to physically leave, grab lunch, and come back.
And I eat all day long, like it when I was working the cashier at QT.
But it's not about eating.
In between every single customer, I'd go back and take a couple bites of whatever I was eating.
But this is about getting away from work.
I've never done it.
Getting away from your coworkers.
I wouldn't know what that was like.
According to one report, employees say taking a real lunch break makes them feel happier. It makes them feel more productive. Yet 51% report they still skip lunch at least once a week. Not because they're not hungry, but, quote, because they don't have time. Back-to-back meetings, which could be emails. Heavy workloads. A culture that rewards being constantly on often make taking time for lunch to recharge impossible. And in fact, since 2023, many companies, particularly tech companies, have all kinds of lavish food perks. And I don't mean the company kitchen. I mean, there are companies out there where you have a chef, you can get food to order, and then you're way less likely to leave and go take a break. That is crazy. People are skipping lunch less because they doubt its value and more because the workday is built to crowd it out. And I'm telling you, in my first almost 20 years on the job, it was a grab and go lifestyle with television news. You literally lived in a drive-thru, which was exhausting. There was huge burnout in that industry.
Not good for you.
But also, it's incredibly unhealthy to constantly be eating out. So, happy National Take Your Lunch Back Break Day. And I hope you took lunch. And if you didn't today, try to take one tomorrow.
When we go to break here, I'm going to eat some rice and another burger patty from our picnic today. Which, by the way, we missed you at the picnic.
I know. I had plans. I'm sorry.
I have a run do not walk. Do you want it?
Yeah, lay it on me.
So we were watching a very boring World Cup game the other night, and I can't remember which one it was, but we were bored. So we flipped over to the Netflix and just started scrolling through, trying to figure out, you know, what's next on our watch list. We're all caught up on Dutton Ranch and all those shows. And we tripped on a show with Tina Fey as the director, producer, whatever.
Yeah.
Called Four Seasons. It's got Steve Carell in it. It's got a number of other actors and actresses that you would know. It is a comedy. I wouldn't call it raunchy. I mean, there's some raunchiness to it. I wouldn't watch it with your kids.
Yeah.
But the first season, we were only through the first season, is 8 episodes. And there's 2 episodes per season. So spring is 2 episodes. Summer is 2 episodes. I don't want to give away too much of the plot or the premise because I want you to go watch it. But it's on Netflix. It's called Four Seasons. And it is absolutely hilarious. I was a curmudgeon about it the first 2 episodes, looking at Mary Beth like, whatever, this is stupid.
And then you liked it.
We stayed up until almost 1 in the morning last night because we wanted to finish the first season and had 2 episodes
left. Did you see it, Dan?
It's phenomenal. And Four Seasons, this is basically
it's based on the movie.
It's a remake of the old Alan Alda movie, Four Seasons.
When Sam told me he was watching Four Seasons, I go, the old Alan Alda thing? I knew this was based on, that was a movie though, correct? That wasn't a series with Alan Alda and Rita Moreno.
This is really good.
And it's Tina Fey. She stars in it and wrote and directed it.
Yeah, she is all over it. Yeah.
Both versions share the same premise, following a group of 3 lifelong couples who vacation together each season and whose dynamic is disrupted when one couple goes through something, and we will leave it at that.
I was going to say, don't give it away.
I won't. the original, I remembered this, Alan Alda. I did not remember Carol Burnett was in it. The original film was written, directed, and starred Alan Alda alongside Carol Burnett. All right.
It's worth it. Go check it out on Netflix. Four people on the text line, back to back to back. I loved Four Seasons.
Take a look. Take a look. The problem is for me, and don't take this the wrong way, and I'm not going to give anything away, I remember how the other one went. I still remember it. And it's probably been 30 years since I've seen it. And so it's hard for me to come back and watch something when you know or you think you know what's coming.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. You heard this in one of Dan's earlier newscasts. Growing movement is targeting classroom screen use in the Shawnee Mission School District. But Shawnee Mission ain't it. This is just one story from KNBC 9 News, and I know a lot of other districts are looking to scale back screen time as part of a growing national movement to reduce technology use in classrooms. But I would ask, does that mean no more movie day? God, we used to love movie day. Several parents spoke during the school board meeting this week and asked the district to start limiting iPad use for kindergarten through second grade, remove students' access to YouTube, and place a greater emphasis on keyboarding skills. I'm all for that. The parents are part of something called Schools Beyond Screens. It is a nationwide advocacy effort that questions the amount of time students spend on devices during the school day. If we're using these to learn, is this the best thing? Advocate Diana Dewey asked, is this the most efficient way to learn? What are we giving up by putting kids on screens for 4 hours a day when that time could be better spent connecting with their peers? Supporters of the movement argue that reducing screen time could create more opportunities for face-to-face interaction and other learning activities like gym. Remember gym class? According to the group, three public school districts in Kansas and one in Missouri have already taken steps to reduce the use of iPads and Chromebooks. None of those districts is in the Kansas City metropolitan area. And I'm curious, if the teachers hate the cell phones and the state of Kansas is mandating you can't even have a cell phone inside the school, what sense does it make to hand the kids iPads and other types of screen devices within the body of their school day? If we're trying to get away from the distractions, why then turn around and produce a distraction for the kids in the name of learning? It doesn't make much sense to me.
So with this being a Shawnee Mission School District effort, I'll speak as an alum of Shawnee Mission School District. I was a senior in high school when they first rolled out the one laptop, one student policy where every single student
Everyone's going to be connected. Yep.
I can tell you that my first year experience, I'm sure they figured it out after that, was an absolute disaster. People were going on to Tor browsers. They were using the dark web through their laptops. They were playing games in class. Some got caught watching adult content. All of these things were eventually locked down throughout the year, but initially it was an absolute disaster. And what we found in many cases, because as we were part of the transition, we also still had the textbooks, was that for most teachers, while they were being instructed to use the laptops a certain percentage of the time, it was almost like a, hey, the principal's coming down the hall, get your laptops out kind of a thing. Because it was much easier for them to keep kids focused with the books and just go, okay, we're going to turn to, you know, page 415 today, looking at chapter 4,
and back
section
then, Sam,
7.
Though, correct me if I'm wrong, it was about connectivity more so. That we want every child to have access to this technology because this technology is where the future is going. Not every child has access to a computer at home, so we're going to provide it during the body of the day.
They were getting instruction from administrators to be using the laptops for a certain percentage of their lectures.
That's crazy.
And they were overtly, all of my teachers, going around it to a point where we would have our laptops on our desk shut. And if the principal came in, it was like an unspoken rule.
Ah!
Go ahead and open up the laptop.
Ah!
Pretend you're using it.
913-586-7798. We're back after this. Stick with us. Update on a story out of Las Vegas, and the end result of the story ticks me off. We'll get to that in a minute. From CBS News, authorities have finally solved the murder of a Las Vegas man who was strangled to death with a telephone cord inside of his home more than 20 years ago. And you can guess how they did it.
They traced his bad debt?
They traced his bad DNA. The case dates back to December 29th, 2005, when an apartment manager reported something was amiss at a property in Las Vegas. Police get there. They determined the victim had died from strangulation with a phone cord, and his car was missing, along with his keys to his home. They found the car abandoned, and then everything went cold, right? They recovered a DNA profile that they all thought this entire time was linked to the person responsible. However, they never got a match because the person responsible was not in the system as a violent offender at that time. So fast forward to 2024, investigators resubmit the DNA profile for lab analysis, and they used the genealogy route. They were able to trace that sample to a relative of the suspect in this man's murder, who detectives also believe was seen in surveillance footage shortly after the killing, having used this man's car to drive to a store and his bank card to make a purchase there. So long story short, it was always the guy that they thought it was. It took all of this time until we have the genealogical testing.
They just didn't have any concrete evidence
to actually say, yes, this is the guy who did it. The potential murder suspect, who was not publicly named, and this is where I get ticked off, died in 2020.
Mm.
Though an arrest is not possible, the lab still characterizes the person's identification as a significant breakthrough in the case. Number one, why the hell would you not release the identity of the homicidal maniac that strangled someone in Vegas with a telephone cord? And number two, because we didn't have this specific technology until the last, what, 5 years that police departments started using this, I always ask you this. How many other people did that person kill in all of the 20 or 30 years he was out roaming around amongst us that they weren't able to bring him to justice? That's what makes me mad about this. I just think we have the technology now with the DNA databases. I don't understand why we're not using it all the time, not just for justice for the victims and the families, to protect the rest of us from all of the weirdos that are still out there free because it's an unknown killer.
Well, and I think the biggest problem is the fact that legal defense
knows money.
Well, and legal defense knows straight up that they can pick that argument apart pretty quickly.
No, I think it's funding. They don't have the funding to test all of the samples. That's absolutely what it is. We talked to a police department about this a few months ago, and I'm trying to remember the cost, but Sam, it was astronomical. They raised some money through the family. They used some federal grant money. They cobbled together some money from one of the city's budget. I want to say it was Overland Park. And they were finally able to make it happen. But they said the days of, like, when you watch 48 hours and you think they're just going to shove it into some genealogical database, these are private companies, and it is very, very costly to test.
The lab samples. Testing can top $1,500 per sample. But what I was talking about was that most of the cases here, typically it's like a 15% match, a 30% match, a 60% match.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that if they're not confident, if they don't have good other hard evidence, which it seems like they had other hard evidence pointing to this guy.
Yeah, you have to have. You can't just have the DNA.
Then it doesn't matter if we have some slight comparison to some ancestry database where, you know, his fourth cousin did ancestry 6 years ago.
Yes, but any good detective will tell you what you do is you look at that tree and immediately you know the killer was male. It's male DNA. So you wipe out all the women in the tree. It's not a woman.
Yeah.
Then you wipe out all of the dead people in the tree. Yeah. It's not the dead people. And you just keep going. Then you go, all right, which one of these bozos happened to live in Las Vegas at the time this guy was killed? All right, now we've narrowed it down, what, to two, three, maybe one? So the other detective work has to come along with it. I just think the cost it's so cost prohibitive. They've got to figure out a way to make that.
It's not going to go down.
More cost effective to solve more cases to protect the rest of us. 913-586-7798. When we get back, what type of bad behavior when you are not at work do we all agree as a society is bad enough that you should lose your job? And I'm going to ask you that because we see this all the time. Now that there's cameras everywhere, everybody's got a cell phone, surveillance. When someone behaves badly, How bad do you have to behave where your boss says, oh my gosh, saw that video, that was you acting like a fool, you're fired? I don't know if I'm so sure this woman who was just fired this week by J.P. Morgan Chase should have been fired.
And have you ever wanted to be mad at somebody, but you just couldn't be because they were just having too good of a time? I'll tell you about it.
I can't wait for that story. Yeah. Back after this.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.